This workshop is on the first spark of hope, and I was asked to chair it, and I did not realize I was going to be speaking for a few minutes, so bear with me, because this is going to be highly improvised, but I am very grateful to be here and have this opportunity. Again, I'm an addict. My name's Kaylin, and you know, I get all in my head about all of these things, but at the end of the day, I know what hope is, and I've worked a program of Narcotics Anonymous that is highly founded in that. And I guess to talk about hope, I'll give you like a little bit of background on me. I'm not going to come up here and tell you my story right now. I don't think we have time for that. But I did drugs, believe it or not. And it didn't go well for me. I was raised in a household full of addicts. It was something that was always really, really common, very, very available, and a lot of bad things happened, and I didn't know anyone that had ever recovered before. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know that was a thing that people do. I saw people go to prison, and I saw people get hospitalized, and I saw people go to jail and prison, and, you know, that's the deal. That's what addiction does to us. So I wouldn't say that I was someone that had like a whole lot of hope for a long time. And you know, like at the end of that road, when I find myself after getting institutionalized and put in jail over and over again, and essentially just like following the exact same trajectory as everyone I had grown up around, I find myself in a place, and it's not even the worst place I had been in my addiction. You know what I mean? Like, I ended up in New Orleans with a girl I had known for 2 weeks. I moved out there, and I just had this like spiritual void, this like absolute hopelessness. You know, I wasn't in jail. I wasn't in the psych ward. I didn't almost die that time. But I came to a point where I was like, I really just don't want to do this anymore. And I can't seem to die, and like it really is that hopelessness that like brought me into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. Not that I came directly here, because I didn't really know this existed. I'd been briefly exposed to it in jails and institutions, but I don't think I was mentally present enough to like really even know what was going on. So I ended up in a treatment facility, which is not Narcotics Anonymous, that then shipped me off to South Florida, where I got clean. And it was like a requirement where I was living that I had to go to meetings. And I had really not much of anything. And I didn't know anyone down there. And someone asked me if I wanted to go with them to a 12-step meeting. And I was like, okay. And I go, and I have no idea what's going on. And I was really, really skittish and like anxiety driven, because I had no idea how to function as a human being or how to look someone in the eye. And I sat in the meeting in the back, and I didn't speak to anyone, and as soon as it was over, I needed to leave. But it was the first time that I had ever really seen people that had gotten and stayed clean. And it was that like first spark of hope. And I'm not going to say that I was instantly like, oh, I'm going to stay clean forever. This is great. Like, I was definitely loitering with the potential expectation to recover, but I didn't really have the full willingness until I had about 4 months clean and my mom overdosed and died. And it was kind of that thing I had been waiting for, like, my whole life. Like, waiting. And, like, not in a negative way, but, like, it was a spiritual awakening for me, where I was like, that's where I end up. Like, I've recreated everything in her life over and over again. And like, inevitably, I'm gonna die shooting dope in a motel room with my sister, you know? So I got a sponsor. Like, that's what gave me the willingness. I was like, I want to do something different. I want a different life than that. Like, the hope was there. Narcotics Anonymous gave me that hope. And I started taking almost every suggestion. You know what I mean? I was a newcomer. There was no, like, perfect recovery. But I started taking a lot of suggestions, and I started working the steps. And the steps are what kept me clean. And we know the first step, we're powerless over the disease of addiction. Our lives have become unmanageable. That was out of the question. Like, I knew that. Everything in my life was unmanageable. I was 22 when I got clean. I had no life skills. I didn't even really know how to do laundry. I didn't have a car. I didn't really have a place to live. I was living in a, like, halfway house. I had no real friends. Most of my family was using or didn't want anything to do with me. And, like, I needed the hope of Narcotics Anonymous so, so bad. And I followed my sponsor everywhere. She got me involved in service immediately. She made me feel a part of. I chaired a lot of meetings, and then I did H&I, and I continued to build on this idea, you know? And I got to the second step, and I think the first time I worked the second step, it was definitely highly focused on, like, coming to believe, because I was kind of disillusioned to the idea of a higher power in a lot of ways. I was raised around church, and, like, nothing terrible happened to me there. It's not that I specifically resented it, but I was just kind of like, eh. Like, I don't know if I'm into that. And she was really, really gentle with me, and she encouraged me to go around. I had to write down, like, hope shots in this little journal. So throughout my day, I would write down anything that gave me hope. And I was working at a bagel shop at the time. It was, like, my first real job. And I always smelled like garlic and onion. And I would go on my break to smoke a cigarette behind the dumpster. And I would watch the bees. And the bees were my first higher power. I would sit there and I would watch them. And the bees pollinate the plants that create oxygen that I breathe. And I felt like there was something larger than me in that moment. And then as I continued to just go about my business and I'm writing down these hope shots, anytime something really bad was happening, or I was, like, really deep in my grief over my mother and everything going on with my family, like, I would get to work and, like, first thing in the morning there'd be, like, a bee on the front door, you know? And I stayed clean on that hope, you know what I mean? On that, like, little sign from something, from God, but I wasn't ready for that word yet. So hope started really small for me. And, like, the idea of a higher power started pretty small for me. And that's changed significantly over time. But I needed the bees. And, like, when they say you can believe in whatever you want, like, you really can. It can be whatever you want. It's none of my business what you believe in. But, like, that idea that there's something bigger than me out there is absolutely necessary in order for me to stay clean and continue to work the steps. And I think as I continued to work the steps and then worked another second step eventually, it became much more on, like, the second half of that statement that, like, I can be restored to sanity. That idea that I'm capable of changing. I think I kind of glazed over that the first time because I was so focused on, like, trying to figure out what I believed in or if I believed in anything that, like, I didn't really pay much attention to that second half. But I have to believe that I'm capable of changing in order to continue in my recovery, that I can be restored to sanity. And, you know, at the time, I was like, I don't even know what that looks like. I wrote down a list of goals that my sponsor asked me to write, and I had all kinds of things on there. And there was, like, the logistical baggage of, like, I need to get my legal things figured out, and I need to pay all these fines, and I need to go to court, and I wanted to get a car, okay, and I got my car back, and this car had the front and the back windshield busted out of it, and it was missing half the back bumper, and I drove that car for 5 years, like, with the most pride of anyone you've ever seen. Like, I loved that car, and I remember just crying to my sponsor on the phone about how I was never going to get that car back, okay? Like, I was so grateful for that car when I saved up the money to get it back. It's like, I'm never going to get the car, and I'm never going to be able to move out of this sober living house, and I'm never going to be able to get a real job and do all these things. Like, it all felt so intangible until I really came to that idea that, like, I'm capable of changing. Like, there is hope here. I've seen all of these people, and if I look around, like, I get to watch every addict that works a program of Narcotics Anonymous change their life. And, you know, I can say today that I got the car back, and I have a different car now, believe it or not, because it wasn't going to make it much longer. And, like, to where I am today, where I'm in Oklahoma. I never imagined that I would live in Oklahoma, but like one of the many gifts of recovery is that I get to try new things and I get to learn and grow and like lost dreams reawaken. And my wife got into vet school out here in recovery. You know what I mean? Like, so we were able to come out to OSU. Like, beautiful things happen if we stay clean and we believe we're capable of changing and growing and being better people. So today, my life is something I couldn't have ever imagined. Like, today I get to wake up every morning and there is silence in my house. You know what I mean? Like, it's really that simple sometimes. I can wake up and I can sit down and I can take a moment and I can practice my 11th step that, like, I am okay and everything will be okay as long as I don't use today. It's really that simple for me. I like to pick a spiritual principle, meditate on it for a few minutes, and, like, feel that gratitude of, like, I get to wake up in my quiet house. There is no one yelling. There is no violence, there is no drug use in my home, and I get to go to work, which, listen, I'm not going to say every single day I'm grateful to go to work, but, like, I have a job where people depend on me to show up and work with their children. Who would have thought? And I get purpose from that. Like, Narcotics Anonymous has given me purpose in my life, and I get to carry the message and sponsor other women, and today what gives me the most hope is watching people recover. Like, I keep coming back because I get to go to meetings and I get to see people get clean and stay clean. And every time, like recently I kind of fell into a little bit of a depression. There was a lot going on, and a woman I had sponsored on and off for a couple of years overdosed and died. And I had that moment where, like, I was like, oh, like, it just hurt. It hurt really deeply, and, like, grief is part of recovery. Like, there's no way to go through this life without grieving in some sense, but, like, took me back to that second where I had to, like, reapply those tools and find that hope again and refocus on, like, the people in my life and the things around me that are good. Because there's so much hope if I'm willing to actually look and be present today. But again, it's a reminder that, like, that's kind of what happens if we decide to use again. Inevitably, jails, institutions, and death. And unfortunately, death was the outcome that time. But on the other hand, I have so many people in my life that I love, that support me every single day, that are staying clean and getting new jobs and getting new vehicles and learning new things and going back to school. Like, I get to watch everybody just, like, blossom and bloom around me. And again, I'm kind of rambling because I was not planning to do this, so there's no real structure. So I'm probably going to wrap it up here, and I'm going to pass it off to Jeff, who is much more prepared than I. And thank you for praying with me before this, Jeff. Really, really appreciate that. And with that, I'm going to ask Jeff to come up and share.
I'm an addict. My name's Jeff. Amen. Let's give another hand to Caitlin. She did really good. Being caught up in something she didn't know was going to happen. Man, I see a lot of familiar faces here. really glad that y'all got to come participate today. I'm glad I'm here. Conventions are a celebration of recovery. You know, that's something we all have in common, and that's our common welfare, that we're here, we're trying to help each other get clean, stay clean, and be a success at living the program. And, you know, and one part of that had to happen for me to even make me realize that I wanted to get clean was coming out of the darkness. And, you know, and I'm sure that we can all relate to a few things. And darkness is probably one of them. You know, a bottom is a bottom and pain is pain. I think we can all get with that. And I do want to have to make notes because I get spacey. And I'll take off in different directions. And if I do, then I go back and I put my finger right in the middle of this paper and I can say, well, at least I can talk about that and get back on track maybe. But, you know, another thing got me sort of off track. You were talking about the bees. And, you know, I heard the interesting thing about bees recently and that they do not, they're wise enough to not take the time or energy to argue with flies about which is better, honey or shit. And in my mind took that a little bit further is like when I was out there using, I was all about the shit. And little did I know that you bees were in here with the honey. Because I was in the darkness and you couldn't tell me anything different. And it was a hopeless state. When I was out there using, it all boiled down to I resigned myself to the fact that I was going to be an addict probably till the day I died. There was just no way out. I tried all different types of ways to use successfully, and that was my quest. I never thought about stopping using, never. Even when I had brief periods of abstinence, or some people call it incarceration, but I was always building a bank, you know, because, you know, the cops had interrupted me, you know, and I almost had my head right, and there I go to jail, and it doesn't matter whether it was weeks or months, and my hope when I got to jail was that, man, maybe I can feel the dope when I get out of here, you know, and maybe I can do it right, and I have all these plans in my head not to screw up this time. And so my quest was like to use successfully and not suffer any consequences, and because I always suffered consequences. And then it got to the point where I felt like I had them coming. I felt guilty about everything. Even when people blame me for stealing their stuff and I didn't do it, I thought, well, you know, I can't really argue the point that I might not steal from them in the future, you know. So I take that blame on too, but it was truly a hopeless state. It was not good out there using it. I'm sure a lot of y'all, you know, can relate to that. It was like I was just on bottom and I was dragging. And I thought that's just where I'm gonna be. I came up with a plan, you know, about my only hope was to use successfully without consequences. So I had some plans, and one of them, we used to score pharmaceutical drugs off of cancer patients. You know, and that kept you sort of like, you knew the purity because it came from the pharmacy. You know, there wasn't any wondering. And I'm sure some of y'all have done what I've done. It's like y'all did some bad dope, bought some bad dope, and then you had to go back and buy some more just to make sure it's bad. You know, I had some stuff take me to my knees and almost kill me, and I did the same thing. I went back and tried it again. And that's the risk you take out there. You just get to the point, you're in search of getting your head right and looking for that hit, and it doesn't matter if it might be the one that takes you out. And so I thought, if I could only get cancer bad enough to get the medicine for it and not die, that would be a good thing to happen, but I didn't have cancer. And so that was a brief thought that went out the window. The other thought was, I had worked with the guy, and he told me he was working in a treatment center in Abilene, Texas. And that's about 2.5 hours away from where I was raised up in Wichita Falls, Texas. And I got to thinking, and I had before, because I thought this in jail, you know, I can get out of jail and I can do a clean UA and go to work for somebody in a good place, work for 30 days, get hurt on the job, get a little workman's comp coming in, get the doctor to write you some prescriptions, and then if I could keep my habit down to 50 bucks a day, I could hustle 50 bucks a day, and that was my plan. So I went to treatment. And with the hope to use successfully when I get out. But I knew they couldn't detox an addict like me, so I went around and talked people into fronting me some methadone and some time-released morphine and some Vicodin, and I snuck them in. And I was in detox there for 2 days, and you know how it is. You talk to people. God's children know each other, and this other junkie was in there, so I befriended him, and me and him talked about similar drugs that we like to do and what got us, you know, and about that kicking, you know, methadone in jail and, you know, some tough things like that. So he asked me after 2 days, he said, you know, I'm over here flip-flopping, doing somersaults. He said, I can't sleep, sick. He said, you're over snoring every night. He said, what's up with that? And I said, well, I thought, you know, do you want to feel better? You're sick. He said, yeah, I'd like to feel better. And I said, well, I got something that'll help you out. I told him what I had. And he sat there and sort of looked to the ground. And then he looked at me. His name was Bill, Bill S. And he said, Jeff, he said, I would like to do that, but I had 3 years clean in Narcotics Anonymous. And it was the best ride I'd ever had. He said, I'd lived a bad life up to that point. And he said, I screwed up. And he said, I'm in detox. And when I detox off this crap, he said, I'm going straight to NA, to the groups, to the meetings. And I said, you're not staying for the whole treatment? He said, no. And so he turned me down, and I thought, dadgummit, he really thinks there's a better way or some other. He's going to suffer through withdrawals just because he thinks he's found a better way. And my second thought was, hell, he's going to snitch me off, man. So, you know, I took the remaining stash I had, and then I got sick. My little withdrawal plan didn't work very good, and I was sick, but they brought in an H&I meeting, and I asked a guy to sponsor me because they said, get a sponsor. And he said, nah, I ain't going to sponsor you, but he will, one of the sponsees. And he gave me his phone number and a quarter to call him. That's what it cost back then. And I didn't do it. But what got my attention, I got to tell you, Bill, when he shared that with me, you know, the topic here is the spark, you know, hope. And when Bill shared that with me, it aroused my curiosity. Like, you know, he's looking for a better way of life, and he knows he's found it. And so I'm wondering about that. And so I think that was my initial spark of hope. You know, it was borderline. They got the druggy buggy and took us to a meeting at the Hope Group in Abilene, Texas. And I walked in there, and one old guy, he said, hey, he said, you're in treatment, aren't you? I said, yeah. He said, guess what? I said, what? He said, I've got 17 days clean today. And I look at him, I go, damn, I wish I had 17 days clean. I know I'd have to feel better. I'm just sick as a dog. And I said, well, that's good. He said, yeah, man, it feels good. And I got to thinking about that. You know, I think, well, if he can get 17 days, maybe I can too, because I know I've got to feel better, so I got to hang on. You know, I got a plan. It's a 30-day plan. And I just screwed off about 5 days of that plan by using when I was in treatment, so I still got 30 days to go. And so I hung on. And the next thing you know, there's a new guy walked in the door of the treatment center, and they, you know, got him settled in and got him in detox, and he's outside smoking. And I walked up to him. I said, "Hey, man." He said, "Hey." I said, "Guess what?" He said, "What?" I said, "I got 17 days clean today." And so I realized that was my true spark when that guy told me he had 17 days clean today. And when I thought, maybe it's possible for me to get 17 days clean. Maybe it is. And so I hung on to that, and I got 17 days clean. And what I realized, even today, my initial spark, and I think it's the quintessential spark that the book, the literature talks about, of hope that I got, came from somebody sharing their clean time with me. You know, and so my clean date is October 26, 1996. Just like it was shared when other people shared their clean date, and like Landon, it's not so much to, you know, impress you or anything like that. It's just to show y'all that the program does work. And so as far as a workshop on hope, you know, really all I can do is share about hope and how I've received hope and possibly, you know, and how I can give hope. And that's just, you know, that's it pretty much. So I'm encouraging y'all. I got to share about West Texas, my home groups, and all the area when somebody shared and got up to share in a meeting or sitting down sharing a meeting, they say, "Well, my name is Jeff. My clean date is 10/26/96. We shared our clean dates. Did anybody else come from a place like that when you shared your clean date every time you shared in a meeting? Okay. Well, I come up here. It was a shock. Y'all didn't. I said, "What is wrong with y'all? Man, why aren't you sharing your clean dates?" You know, it's not about, you know, bragging. It's about giving the hope away. And so that took me quite a while. It also took quite a while when somebody shared something for people not to applaud for them. We had applauding meetings, you know, where I come from. Man, y'all, I come up here and relocate to Oklahoma, and that's not going on. Well, it just depends on where you're at and all that, and I'm used to it, and I can get with it either way now, and I'm good. But, you know, most of the good, you know, sharing your clean date and stuff like that, you know, get with somebody that's new, and if you got, you know, 10 days clean and they got one, share your clean time with them and tell them, "Hey, man, it's possible. It's possible." You know, and share the hope and love. So that's important to me. I think, you know, that's what we do. And it's talking about, you know, what's our primary purpose. Caitlin talked about, you know, the fifth tradition, and how do we do that? It's by our message. You know, what is our message? It's hope and freedom. And so we should share that. We should share the hope. And a lot of times we do, and even unintentionally we do. We share, like, "Hey, man, I struggled through this and went through that, and now I'm on the other side." And a lot of people might be struggling and going through things right here today, and you're hoping you can make it to the other side. And what happens is that you find out if you hang on, you don't use, don't put in, and you share with other people your struggles so you don't have to go through it alone. You know, get out of your head and share what's going on with you, and let other people know, man, they'll get behind you. They'll lift you up, and they'll give you encouragement and edification. Now, I don't know about where you did. Anybody get any type of schooling when you're in school on motivation or edification? I didn't. If you did sports, you probably did. So I get that in here, and that lifts me up, you know, and gives me some hope. And, you know, having people tell me that they believe in me, even when you don't believe in yourself, I think that's good to let people know. And it's helped me and benefited me. The the hope for me turned into belief, because I got to the other side of a few things. And I got to let you know, my initial problems while I got here was, you know, trying to find a job. It didn't take long, but it was romances. And then, you know, and that's all good. You know, you go through a breakup, and it's okay if you do the breaking up. But when you're the recipient of it and you get dumped, that one's tough, you know, for me. And it seemed like after going through that, you know, a few times, you know, sort of like you, you know, had that, my percentage record wasn't all that good, but it's tough, and it's an energy stealer and stuff like that. And you finally get to the other side, and you think, well, you know what, man, that's over with. I found myself accepting the fact that I'm in a theater, and the screen's up here, and I heard Tyrone from Chicago say this, and that's what took me, lifted me up into acceptance. And he said, I'm looking at this movie screen, and it's black, nothing's playing. And he said, and I look around, and all the windows are boarded up, and the doors are boarded up. I'm the only one in this movie theater wanting to see this show. You know, and everybody else going about their own business. And I realized I got to get up and get out of that theater and get back to life. And so I hear things people share, and I love stories and examples like that. That helps me. I'm the kind of person that gets into that. And I like to tell stories, and I got a lot of war stories, and some of them are even true. I'm doing my best to stay on the honest side today. Sometimes I've been in a place where, like, God, I just wish things would be better, and I'm hoping things would be better. And so there's a difference between hoping and wishing. And hope is a spiritual principle. And if things are just like not right, but you're hoping that things get better, you don't even know what better is. That's the thing about hope. You don't even know what to have to know what the result of your hoping is going to lead to. You know, just hope it gets better. I don't know what form or fashion it's coming in. It looks dark and bleak, but I hope it gets better. And then, it, you know what? It does. Sometimes I just sank so low that I couldn't see anything but dark, and that's been a recent experience of mine. You know, there's other people, and Landon, he shared about it last night. You know, I was diagnosed with cancer, follicular lymphoma, in February 2024, and it caught up and got the best of me in May of this year, and I was hospitalized, and it was a bleak, dark spot in my life to be in. They only had room, and it was a larger room for me at this hospital I went into, and it was really nice, and it was on the corner of a building and windows, and they had chairs and little couches, and they told me it's like it was a VIP room, but they opened it up, so I had nothing else. And I went in there and talked about the place I was in mentally. I asked the nurse, I said, so this is a VIP room? She said, yeah. I said, are you sure it's not the DIE room? It looked like a hospice room for me, you know, like people come in to visit and all. I'm thinking, am I dying? You know, this place I'm going to die at? And I had so many people praying for me, praying for miraculous healing. And that was put out, you know. And this hope was, at this time, I had a lot of things happen, you know, and I've gotten to the other side of a lot of things, you know, in 29 years. And so I did have some belief. I had some faith. I had some trust. But the pain from this cancer and lack of sleep just made me crazy and wore me down. And I'm not doing pain meds. And my wife is doing everything she can to help me be out of pain or to contain the pain. And you know, spending hours at nighttime giving me massages and putting castor oil plasters patches on me, you know, and the, you know, everything we could do. And it wasn't that we were avoid using painkillers. It was just that it didn't really come to mind. But when I got admitted to the hospital, then they loaded me up, and rightly so. And I called my sponsor and I told him, I said, man, they're loading me up on this stuff. He said, well, Jeff, he said, you know, we used to use to die. Today, you're using medicine to live. There's a big difference. And my sponsor, family, a lot of people in this room prayed for me and prayed for miraculous healing. They, when I got out of the hospital, they brought food. They came and took me to doctors. Raphael drove me 90 miles to get a massage. And, you know, a lot of people in here helped, and I just want to thank each and every one of you. That was the 22nd of May, and I had a PET scan, and I had cancer and lesions in 40 places in my body. It had metastasized in my bones, in my organs, in my bowels. And 60 days later, they started me on chemotherapy. And with y'all's prayers, 60 days later, it had all resolved, miraculously resolved. Some people like to show you photos of their grandchildren or their dog and stuff like that. I got side-by-side images 60 days apart that I'm proud of, and I'll be happy to show y'all the lesions being here on the 26th, and then the tumors and everything gone on the of May the 22nd, and then on 60 days later, July, they were gone. So I like to show those. And it's just another reinforcement, you know, what hope can turn into. I was hoping things would get better. I didn't want to go down that road. I didn't want a DIE, you know, in the VIP room. But I thought about it. So, you know, if you're hoping just for some relief of wherever you're at, you need to get to the other side, man, hang on. It's coming. You're a day closer. You're a day closer to getting through what you're going through. And that's what the program's taught me. It's all about what we hear when we first get here. Don't quit 5 minutes before the miracle happens. Yeah. That's a hope shot, isn't it? If you can digest it and take it in and hang on to it. And that's what I did. I just kept coming to the meetings and, you know, hanging on to y'all's shirt tails and dragging me through it all. So it's been a good ride. It's been a good ride here. And I'll just, you know, thank you for the opportunity to even share about hope. And I do know this meeting is scheduled to end at 10:45. But I learned from a guy named John A. Out of Fort Worth, Texas, who recently got 50 years clean last week, that he did a workshop at the Lone Star region about 20 years ago, and it was on one topic, and he shared for 15 minutes. He said, you know, that's all I know about that. And although I feel like that's all I know about hope right now, but I know there's a lot of people in here that have some good experience with hope. And if it's okay with you, Madam Chairperson and Mr. Program Chair, I would like to have some people come up here and share about 3 minutes about hope, what hope means to you. And when you come up here, share your name, your clean date, your home group, and where you're from. And what I'd like to do is, if anybody's on the back row, because y'all might be reluctant. Somebody on the back row want to come up and share about 3 minutes about what hope means to you? Somebody, how about the dude with the glass on top of his head right there? That jacket. Come on, we ain't got all day. Yep. You're good. Come on, man. That would have been the hit, too. You know what?
I'm definitely an addict. My name is Gary V.
Hi, Gary.
It's been by the grace of God and the program Narcotics Anonymous. I've been clean since July 10th, 1979. And you can't do that without hope. You know, when I got here, I was... What they did for drug addicts in the 70s, they tried to lock them up for the rest of their life. That's it. You know, just, I've had so many hope shots that, you know, every day that I wake up is a miracle. I have hope. You know, I too am a cancer survivor. I went through interferon and ribavirin for 2 years for hepatitis C. That's a bitch. And I never lost the hope that was given to me. You know, my very first NA meeting was a bunch of convicts. And some of the most lying, cheatingest people I've ever known. And I fit right in. But they gave me something. They gave me that hope. Maybe I can do this too. Now, I wasn't sure, but maybe I can. Because I thought I was too far gone. There's no hope for me. Addict like me, they just die. We're spending the rest of their life in jail. You know. But they gave me that little hope shot that maybe, just maybe, you know, there's a chance. And what I found through that hope was there's not a chance. There's a choice. You know. I've been given a daily reprieve from a deadly disease. You know, I still have that toothless dog sits on my shoulder talking shit in my ear every day. Oh, come on, man. You know. And but the thing is, if I don't pick up, he ain't got no teeth. He can talk shit, but he ain't got no teeth. And, you know, I enjoy giving away that hope. Because you got to give it away to keep it. And today I'm full of hope. This is the first convention I've made in probably 5 years due to health reasons. You know, I've been diagnosed with dementia. It's an ongoing process. Through use of medication and recovery, I'm a whole lot better. I'm never perfect, but I probably ain't never gonna make perfect. Yeah. You know, I'm just a lot better. And, sometimes I wish I could just take people and cut the top of their heads off and put in what I know, you know. But I can't do that because I'd be cheating them out of that hope that it was given to me, you know. So many old sayings, you know. I used to be a hopeless dope fiend, now I'm a dopeless hope fiend. You know, because hope's where it's at. Without hope, you know, I'm left to my old devices. And they don't work. You know, I like to be happy, joyous, and free. And I can't do that without hope. Thank you.
Okay. No, it's 10:45 when it's over. Okay. And, thank you for asking. Okay. Just briefly, if you took the top of somebody's head off and you try to cram 46 or 47 years recovery into it, they would overamp if they was an addict, right? You can't take a little, you know, hit like that. So, you were wanting to come up here? Okay.
Promise me 3 minutes or less.
I got a minute or less.
That's right. My name's Calvin. I am an addict. Clean date 9/27/13. I say that in front of all of you because I am fucking bragging. Because there was a time in my life when I first stepped into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous in Elk City, Oklahoma. There was a guy in there that said, "My name is so-and-so, and I've got 12 years clean, which is what I got now." When he told me that, I called him a fucking liar. But I stand up here right now and tell you all got hope. There's two rows of hope sitting right there, and they're with me every day. And I love you guys. That's all I got.
Any females? In the middle. She can't do 3 minutes.
I'll try. I'm Abby, and I'm definitely an addict. My clean date is January 10th, 2021, which is today. Thank you. I'm a living example that the program Narcotics Anonymous does work.
What's home group?
My home group is the best home group in Oklahoma City. It's No Grass. And I heard somebody say one time that if you don't think you have the best home group, then you should probably find a different home group. Hope, boy, whenever I got here, I couldn't even put together a sentence. I couldn't keep a job. I didn't know how to mother my children. I didn't even have my children. I didn't know how to pay my bills. I don't know what this, I know this is a Narcotics Anonymous convention, but I too have cancer, and I know it's so weird, but I see, you know, stories coming up here of, like, they made it to the other side. I'm in the middle of it right now, and so I have hope by watching other people walk through this journey and stay clean. And that's been the entire time of my recovery, is saying, I don't have a job, I don't know how to get a job, and then watching even a still suffering addict walk through that and get employed and stay clean. And so I just follow on the coattails of other addicts. They teach me either one thing, what to do or what not to do, you know, and that's how I navigate my life, is on the coattail of other addicts, paving the way for me to stay clean. And in that, I get to pave the way for other addicts to stay clean. And so I'm grateful to say that I'm sponsored by a sponsor that has a sponsor. And I sponsor people that sponsor people. And that's how we stay clean. We can only keep what we have by giving it away. And that's the hope that we have. So if you want to stay clean, you need some help, just reach out to us. We're here for you.
There's one person in here that called me during my dark times when I was struggling in my illness and stuff, and he gave me a lot of hope. And Mark, if you come up and share for a couple minutes, I'd appreciate it.
Mark.
Hard of hearing.
I'm Mark, and I'm an addict.
I'm Becky, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Becky.
My clean date is 3/22/08, and we have a new home group, a straight line group in Grove, Oklahoma, our new home.
My clean date's 3/12/08.
So I believe, you know, hope starts that... when we're out there on the street and we're out there in our active addiction, that, you know, for me, I just hoped that something would change, that, you know, I hoped things would get better, and I hoped, you know, a lot of stuff. And I hoped that this powerlessness and this pain and suffering and desperation would stop. And I think that's what we do as members, is we come in here and we share about that hope, because there's people feeling just like that. And when we come in and we give them that little spark, like that spark that they have, that I just hope things change, that when we share, it ignites that hope, right? And I shared in the workshop before this about eventually that hope turns to faith, and then faith turns to trust, and then trust turns to knowing. You know, that's kind of where I am now. So I was sharing with Jeff, I had some experience. 2 years ago, the doctors gave me 2 months to live, and you know, went through a lot of stuff, a lot of craziness. I still have terminal cancer, and I'm going to die someday. I don't know what it's going to be from, but it's not going to affect my life today. And my hope is that if anybody is suffering and going through stuff, that there's people like us, because there's several people that have shared about it, you know. And I shared in the earlier workshop that everybody in this room eventually will go through some physical, right, some physical stuff. And we need to share that so that they know where to go when they go through that, because when somebody tells you, or a doctor, or you're sitting in the VIP room or the DIE room, because there's many days that DIE room becomes evident, right?
Yeah.
In our lives, that that we know who to call. And that if you're going through stuff, reach out to people. You know, like I give up all my service commitments, and my hope today is, my service is, when somebody that I know comes up and talks to me about their, you know, their physical ailments, that I pray for them, I pray with them, and I call and I check on them, and that's my service to this program, you know. And so I love you guys, and hang on, just like Jess said, man, don't leave before the miracle, you know, because your life will get better, I promise. Give it a chance. If it doesn't, come beat me up or something, you know. Like, I've been punched in the rooms, it don't fucking matter. So,
okay, well, so my favorite part about hope is always hold on, pain ends. And on the, I came up here with him because we will be married 35 years in February, and we went, our first half of marriage was kind of sucky, you know. We were in the middle of addiction and came close many times to just, you know, doing the fuck it's. And but after getting clean, you know, it's like being with a whole new person, and you know, you worry at first, it's like, God, I don't know if I can handle this dude clean, you know. But you know, we held on, pain ends, and we got through that part of it. And now we're going through another phase in our life where I could lose my partner that I've been with for 35 years, you know. And I've met a bunch of, who's all my nurses in here? Yay, yes. And you know, I think we have our own struggles, especially when our husbands are sick. We see the hospital reports. We, you know, and our nurse part kicks in. It's like, oh gosh, you know, what are we dealing with here? And we try not to show our fear, and we gotta look at life a little different. But we can't show the fear for our spouses that are sick. So I think we need our own support group, don't you, girls? Think so. That may be something to do, Susan. Yeah, so, but yeah, just hold on, pain ends. You know, we all, in our since our recovery, I've seen us go through different stages, different phases through our lives. And, you know, as long as we've always kept a higher power, number one, and kept our support system and told people where we're at in our life, you know, we get through it. Whatever the outcome, you know, we're going to be okay, you know, because I have a big family, and, you know, I look out and I see my higher power everywhere. So we're blessed. Every day we're blessed. So keep coming back. Thank you.
Is there anyone in here who's never had any clean time before but has less than 90 days? Or, you know, that means like anybody from 0 to 89 days. I'd like to hear that's never had clean time before? Nobody? You keep pointing to somebody. Who is it? Okay. Somebody, anybody has less than 90 days, raise your hand. All right, you come on. Tell us what hope means to you.
Tanya, and I'm an addict.
Tanya.
Found myself about 14, 16 months ago, down depressed and hopeless. Lost my mom, my stepmom, my grandmother, and my dad in the last 2 years. My kids moved out of state alone. My new clean date is December 31st, 2025. My home group is now Ada NA. I've been there every day since I got out of detox, and I've never been to detox before. I've been clean before, had many years under my belt, but these people gave me hope and made me know that I'm not alone. Sometimes it's just me and my dog, and she don't talk back, but she whines a lot. But I know that I'll never give up again, because I was down, depressed, and hopeless, and it was very dark. And I got a flashlight today to show me my way out. That's all I got.
Alan, are you in here? Alan from Arizona. Come on. We'll give you 3 minutes.
My name's Alan Addict. My clean date's January 9th, 1979. So yesterday I woke up with 47 years clean. I got clean when I was 2. I used to go to meetings in high chairs and shit. But it's been amazing. I mean, I've seen it all. Let me take that back. I told myself a long time ago, I have not seen everything, because every time I tell myself that, something else comes along. And this past year has probably been one of my toughest years in recovery, and you know, without going into a whole lot of detail, but I don't know how much any of you heard about the flooding in the Midwest, but my home got hit really bad, and I'm in a process. I still got a long ways to go, and I'm in a process of rebuilding. But throughout that whole process, and my sponsor pointed this out to me, he says, I didn't see you get unreasonably mad. I didn't see you get real depressed. You just kept trying to focus on what's the next most important thing to do, and you folks taught me that. You know, that for me, whenever a challenge comes up in my life, I feel like I just need to try to find a solution as quick as I can. I heard a guy sharing at a convention a number of years ago, and if you grew up with Midwest winters, you can kind of relate to this a little bit. He says, I kind of look at my recovery, it's like driving down the road in the dead of winter in a huge blizzard, and all of a sudden my car gets a flat tire. He says, I can do one of two things. I can sit in a car and whine and complain about, I got this flat tire and this weather's terrible and it's freezing cold out, or I can just get off my ass and change the flat tire. Either way, you got to change the flat tire to get from point A to point B. So why put all the energy into whining and complaining about it? But I'm excited for what's ahead of me. You know, I try to keep one thing I was told a long time ago is to try to keep things in my life to look forward to, and that's what I try to do. So anyway, I don't have much else to say. I'm grateful to be here. My friend Dalton is sharing tonight. You guys are in for a real treat. When I found out he was sharing here, and when I found out the dates of the convention, I go, man, that's on my clean date. I got to be here. So thank you.
Give Al another hand for 47 years clean yesterday. Okay, look for another female. Share what hope means to you.
Elena.
Okay, come on.
All right.
Cassie and I'm an addict. My clean date is July 15th, 2025. My home group is Second Chance in Art Kansas City, and I personally think I have the best home group in the world, you know, because they have a lot of love and hope, and just they've given me purpose, man. This is the first time I've had any kind of real clean time, real recovery in my life. I've had some abstinent time, like in the past 5 years, I've tried really hard going to rehab, coming out, staying clean, but I never worked a program. So, like, I've really decided to put my all into it, you know, coming in and out of the rooms. They kept telling me to stay, don't leave before the miracle happens, and I would do that just because I didn't feel like I belonged. I didn't feel like I had purpose, and I had no hope whatsoever. And it just feels good to have that hope in my life again, you know, like, I go to meetings every day. I have a job now. I lost my kids, and when I lost my children, I lost a real big part of me, and that's when I really felt like I didn't have no hope, because they ran through my addiction with me, you know. They didn't have a choice. I just kind of put them in that position, and it's hard to forgive myself for that, you know. And anyways, I see the miracles happening in everybody's lives, and it gives me hope to keep going, you know, and I'm not that person I used to be, and it's a beautiful thing, you know. Recovery is a beautiful thing, and I don't have a lot to share today, you guys, but that's all I got. Thank you.
Will. Come on up here.
That's your interpretation of God's will. You better find another higher power. My name's Will. I'm an addict. My clean date is January 26, 1987. I wanted to speak to the restoration of family. I lost privileges to see my oldest daughter 2 years before I got clean. And she wasn't a part of my life after that. And I had hoped that someday we would get together. And so me and a sponsor, I got 15 years clean at the time. Me and a sponsor driving back from Tulsa. And he asked me, how come you never talk about your oldest daughter? And I told him, I said, well, because she hasn't been a part of my life. I'm assuming God has a better plan for her. I don't feel like I'm part of that plan. I'm sure if it's meant to be, God will find a way to have it happen. So that very same week, I'm at home and I get a phone call. And back then we had these little devices that showed phone numbers. I didn't recognize the phone number, but I picked it up anyway. And it was my oldest daughter. And we talked for like an hour and a half, and we got together that evening, had dinner. I got to meet a grandson that I didn't know I had. And we've had a working relationship ever since. So what I'm trying to tell you guys is that hope does not have a time stamp. You know, I held on to that particular hope for 15 years after I got clean, and God came through. So never, like Mark was saying, don't give up before the miracle happens. It might take 15 years, but whatever it is you're hoping for, if you're working a program of Narcotics Anonymous, God will find a way. Thank you for letting me share.
Okay, and like I say, share your clean time with someone. Let them know that it's possible that they too can get, you know, not only stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Thank you, Narcotics Anonymous. That's all I got. Madam Chairperson.
Hello again. I'm an addict. My name is Kaylin. My clean date is August 24th of 2016, and my home group is Stillwater Serenity Seekers.